10 o'clock, February the 18th, 2011. For the record, this is Charles Chandler, presiding officer in the FRM hearing, so-called. It is my intention that today will be the final day of open testimony in this hearing process. After today, I will be deliberating for the process for the purpose of producing findings of facts required by the New Hampshire Secretary of State. I want to state very clearly that if in my deliberations I find anything that I deem is going to require additional testimony, I will reopen hearings. I will seek additional witnesses. I will take additional testimony. As it stands right now, I don't anticipate that. But that doesn't mean that in between now and the conclusion of the report, that couldn't happen. I absolutely reserve that right. Also, since this is probably the last day of public testimony, I'm going to reread the notice of the investigative hearing so that we can all focus on what we've been doing for about the last 6 months. The notice is as follows. State of New Hampshire, Department of State, Bureau of Securities Regulation, Notice of Investigative Hearings. Upon the request of the Director of the Bureau of Securities Regulation pursuant to the authority in RSA 421B221A through E, the Secretary of State hereby orders that a hearing be convened at 10 a.m. on October 13, 2010, and will continue from day to day as ordered by the presiding officer in room 425, State House Annex, Concord, New Hampshire, 03301 to determine A, whether and under what conditions promissory notes coupled with real property or chattels are securities under the New Hampshire Securities Act. B, whether the existence of a trust or other enhancement may alter the classification. C, whether the agency handling of its part of the, quote, FRM matter, close quote, by the Bureau of Securities Regulation was improper. And D, the facts concerning FRM and the interests offered by it and its affiliate corporations, so as a determination may be made whether those interests come within the definition of a security under the New Hampshire Securities Act. Charles Chandler, a retired attorney at law of Warren, New Hampshire, has been appointed as presiding officer to conduct the hearing. A brief biographical sketch of Mr. Chandler is attached. The director will be in overall charge of the hearing and will be assisted by other members of the Bureau as needed. The hearing shall take place at the place outlined above unless the presiding officer, after notice, designates another hearing venue. The investigation for the hearing can be conducted within or without the state, determined by the director. The presiding officer will make a record of the proceeding and render findings of fact, but not conclusions of law. The transcript of the hearing and findings will be used by the Secretary of State and the director of the Bureau to A, inform the public about promissory notes coupled with mortgages generally and those instruments utilized by FRM in particular. B, to determine whether changes need to be made concerning the regulation of securities enforcement of such notes and mortgages or other enforcement matters. C, to determine whether any changes need to be made in the handling of investor complaints and the general operation of the Bureau of Registration of Securities, Security Professionals, the enforcement of the Securities Act, and the coordination of the Bureau and other state and federal agencies or the sharing of information by the Bureau of other agencies. D, to formulate in conjunction with a special advisory committee to be formed by the Secretary of State recommendations as to appropriate changes that the legislature should consider in the securities or other acts as they may affect the operation of the Bureau. Pursuant to Section 421B22 Roman numeral 2, all testimony will be received under oath or affirmation. Also, pursuant to 421B22, the presiding officer shall have the power to issue both subpoenas, as subpoenas duces tecum, to persons within or without the state who are members of the general public, state officials, former state officials, requiring the production of any books, papers, correspondence, memorandum agreements, or other documents or records which the Bureau of Securities deems relevant, which the presiding officer has deemed should be disclosed. The presiding officer, acting independently, may order any such books, papers, correspondence, or other documents produced as he deems appropriate. Pursuant to Section 421B22(2), Roman numeral 2, in the event that a person refuses to obey a subpoena or subpoenas duces tecum, the Bureau, upon the approval of the presiding officer, may seek enforcement of such subpoenas in Superior Court. The Superior Court shall have the authority to issue an order requiring that the person refusing to testify or to produce the above-listed items appear before the presiding officer and testify or produce subpoenaed documents. A person who refuses to testify or to produce any of the above listed items required by the Superior Court to be given or produced may be punished by the Superior Court as contempt of court. This hearing shall be conducted pursuant to hearing procedures outlined in RSA 421B 26A as such procedures are appropriate. Signed October the 5th, 2010 by William M. Gardner, Secretary of State. That is the order that came about and produced this hearing. Do we have any preliminary matters before we get to our first witness today, Mr. Brandt?
No, sir.
Mr. Spill, do you have anything?
We're going to wait because I'd like to spend until after lunch.
I want to state a couple of things on the record before we do go to Mr. Brandt. I'm going to be receiving a deposition.
Brandt's on the phone.
He's going to be on the phone. I'm going to be receiving a deposition of Scott Farah. That deposition is going to be received by me later in the day. It will be technically accepted by me on Monday. Hence, the hearing is technically not closed until that comes in. I am also awaiting responsive interrogatories from another witness. Those will be taken into evidence. General public will be notified upon the receipt of those, because obviously those will be available to you if you wish to view them. That having been said, I'm ready to take our first witness. The first witness is Mr. Rick Brandt, who I believe in his Hawaii, where it is 5 a.m.
It's
pretty warm here.
Good morning, Department of Education, Bulk Rehab. This is Cindy.
Oh, this must be a state line. I'm sorry about that. 99, right?
Yep.
Mr. Brandt?
Yes, sir.
Okay, you're on a conference call here, and actually at New Hampshire Department of State hearing. Mr. Chandler is the presiding officer, and he'll take it from here.
Mr. Brandt, my name is Charles Chandler. I'm the presiding officer in the FRM investigation case, so-called. It's called by the New Hampshire Secretary of State. Do you understand that you are on a speakerphone now in a publicly opened hearing, and that if you choose to make a statement or testify this morning, you will have to do so under oath? Do you understand that to be so?
That's correct.
Okay, Mr. Brandt, I'm going to ask you to solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give in the matter now pending will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Do you so swear?
Yes.
Okay. You are, in fact, Rick Brandt. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Mr. Brandt, I am informed by attorneys in the Bureau of Securities Regulations that you are one of the victims of this FRM Ponzi scheme. And what I have done universally with people who are victims in that scheme is I have given them an opportunity, if they choose, to read a written statement into the record. If they have a written statement, or if they don't have a written statement, I have given them an opportunity to speak extemporaneously about their relationship with FRM and what happened to them. Do you have a prepared statement?
I don't.
Okay, would you like to speak extemporaneously about your experiences with FRM and CLNM?
Okay, just answering questions. If I could defer that to a later time,
would you explain to me then, and Attorney Spill and Attorney Force here, Mr. Brandt is going to defer to questions, and I was just handed an under seal bracket. When did you come in contact with Scott Farah?
Give me one second here. I can look it up. 10-23-08. He was a hard money lender. And he sent me something in the mail soliciting. I have seller carrybacks for properties that I've sold. So he was looking for people who like to do seller carrybacks to invest in notes. And I'm a real estate broker in Arizona, and I have customers that at that point in time were having a hard time finding money. And so I called him off that letter to see if he could loan money to people in Arizona. And he told me he was licensed in 23 states. I didn't check on any of his licensings anywhere. But I did ask him, I sent him several opportunities to loan people money in Arizona who couldn't get money through traditional sources.
So did you advance money to Scott Farah for any particular projects or properties?
At that point in time, I didn't. I was just trying to find out if he could loan my customers money. And then he started calling me. There was a loan called the Baldy loan, and he started calling me sometime. Let's see here. Looks like it was 7/21/09. He called me about. Looks like he started calling me sometime in 2009 about a Baldy loan. Some guy named Baldy that was a friend of his, and he was a builder, and he had a customer who wanted a house and was qualified on a loan and had put $25,000 non-refundable down on the finished house, and they were looking for a construction loan, a bridge loan. And he started calling me, asking me if I wanted to put some money into that deal. And it sounded like a pretty secure deal because the guy had $25,000 non-refundable in the deal. And so I said I would. There was two other investors that were already in the deal. One was Beverly Cobb, and one was Herb Herdner. And so I never met or talked to Beverly Cobb or Herb Herdner during that period of time. But then after they closed the store down, then I started looking for these other people, and I was lucky enough to find Beverly's husband's phone number in some kind of online phone number finder with his name. I searched. There was probably four pages of Cobb's that came up that had that guy's first name on it, and so I just started calling him randomly, and after about two pages, I came to the right one and got the story about what was happening. If I wouldn't have ran into Beverly, I never would have known.
How much money did you advance?
Yeah, that was approximately $65,000 in that one.
And how did you transmit the money and to whom?
I sent a wire and it went to CLM. I don't remember what the name of their... other than that, I don't know what the rest of the name of the company is, but CLM was their servicing company, I guess, that received the money.
How did you become aware of this, as you called it, Baldy loan? What documents did you receive from FRM, if any?
Well, I received they sent out stuff in the mail, and I received that stuff, but I didn't. I'm not a mail person, so they also sent it out by email. But it was mostly Scott called me. I was kind of throwing all that stuff away. But Scott called me personally and started asking me about it. So it was mostly he called me personally, and then he sent me the paperwork that was their initial summary abstract of what the loan was going to be, sorted up all the what his credit score was and what he was using the money for and stuff. But mostly it was Scott's verbal words that got me interested in the property, in the deal. If he wouldn't have called me on the phone, I wouldn't have been doing business with him.
Did you check with any state agencies concerning Scott Farah, FRM, or CLNM, Inc.?
I did not.
Did you check with any non-state agencies concerning those entities?
No. You know, he told me he'd been in business for 20 years, and he'd been doing different loans. And since I was trying to solicit him as a lender for my customers, I just assumed that that he was a reliable business person, you know. And the way that he conducted his business was pretty standard for guys that do that kind of stuff. I talk to lots of hard money lenders all the time, just because of the business I'm in. You know, I find mostly builders I work with and investors, and you know, so I'm used to talking to hard money guys, and there wasn't anything in the way he spoke or the way he talked about his investment opportunities or about the way he talked about how he did the loan business that would make me suspect that anything was strange or sideways. Paperwork was standard kind of paperwork that you would expect for any kind of deal like this. And so there was no signs or red flags in my mind that said this guy is, you know, crooked.
So as a person who's familiar with hard money lending and that methodology of financing, you saw nothing out of the ordinary in the documents that you received. Is that correct?
Correct. I mean, you know, he had attorneys involved. He had servicing companies involved. You know, and those are the kind of safeguards I would look for when I was doing business with a hard money person.
Did you receive copies of any appraisals concerning this loan?
Could you repeat that?
Did you receive a copy of any appraisal regarding this loan?
Oh, yeah. That's part of the kind of standard paperwork I was speaking of. Yeah, I received credit report. I received on Baldy. I received an appraisal on the property that the money was going to be lent for. I received appraisal, credit report. I received the standard loan documents, mortgages, notes. In Arizona, we do a deed of trust instead of a mortgage. But, you know, when we go to real estate school, we learn about mortgages. So even though I hadn't used a mortgage, I knew that was the standard document for other states and how they did business. And there was an attorney involved that prepared all the paperwork and sent it to me. As a matter of fact, before I invested any money, you know, when he first approached me, he may have approached me for other things besides Baldy, but I asked him to send me his standard documents, you know, so I could look at them to see if, you know, if that was the way I wanted to do business, if he used his standard kind of documents. So I wanted to examine his paperwork to see if that was standard paperwork before I would put any money in him. And so he sent me blank documents of what he did, and then when he sent me the filled out paperwork, it looked like the blank documents. So there was nothing strange about any of that stuff.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I have the time of this advance of funds by you around July 21st of 2009. Is that correct?
That's probably right. I don't have it in front of me, but if you're looking at a piece of paper that I sent, that's definitely the right date.
Okay. Aside from the $65,000, did you make any additional advances to FRM through CLNM or any other methodology?
Yeah, there was a second deal that Scott called me about and wanted money for, and it was the Manukian. It was either Jennifer or Jessica, I can't remember, but some girl that he knew and was doing business with wanted to build five houses, and so he was looking to put together $3 million± on it. Since the other note was paying me monthly payments, I assumed that everything was okay, and so I went ahead and sent money for this one deal, for the Manukian deal too, and I sent him $100,000 on that one.
Mm-hmm. going back to the Baldy transaction, did you receive any lender's title insurance policies from anybody on that transaction?
Not that I remember.
Okay. And is it fair to say, based on your testimony, that you did in fact receive interest payments on the Baldy transaction?
That's correct.
And when did the Manoukian transaction take place, if you recall?
Manoukian. I need to look up that piece of paper here.
That's okay. Let's pass on that for a minute, and we can come back to that. But in any...
Here it is.
Okay.
My folder says 9/24/09, so somewhere around September of 09.
Okay. So you forwarded $65,000 on the Baldy transaction where you were going to be a joint lender. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And you were going to be a joint lender on the Manoukian transaction. Is that correct? Were there any other sums advanced by you for any other projects proposed through FRM?
Luckily.
There were no other sums advanced?
No, luckily not.
Oh, okay. I didn't understand what you said. Now let me ask you something that's extremely important to me. As a person who has a history engaged in hard money lending, did you believe in each of those transactions that the funds advanced by you were secured by an interest in real estate so that if there were a breach of mortgage covenants, you along with other co-lenders would have an ability to foreclose?
Yes.
Okay. And why did you believe that?
Because the documents, the mortgage... You give them a mortgage, and you give them money that's secured by real estate, so the real estate is the collateral. As a matter of fact, after the payment stopped coming, the first thing I did before I tried to even get a hold of the partners in the loan was to call Baldy to let him know that he should start sending the payments to me. But, I was way late. I was way late in this process. Everybody else seemed to know what was going on before I did. Baldy was already filed bankruptcy, and the bankruptcy for Farrah had already started, and notices were being sent out and stuff, and I seemed to have been left off the list of that. But after I found out about it, of course, I got put on the list. But, I believed I was secured by real estate.
And that belief is based upon the documents that were presented to you that were executed as part of the process that funded these projects. Is that fair to say?
That's correct.
Okay. Did you receive any interest payments on the Manoukian loan where you advanced $100,000?
No. And when I talked to Jessica Manoukian, she gave me her attorney's name, but she told me that she had never received the money and she was suing. To be relieved of, apparently she had already signed the paperwork, but she was being suing to be relieved from the liability of the loan.
How did you hear of the collapse of FRM?
When I finally got called it to Cobbs, Beverly Cobb, told me.
Can you give me a time frame for that?
That's a good one.
Roughly.
I'm not sure.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
It was, well, let me see. I sent the money to Mnookin. I get Mnookin loan there, the wire instructions here, so. Let's see. I'm trying to find a date on here, but I don't seem to see one.
Okay.
Wire instructions. The date on my computer for the document says 9/26/09 for the wire instructions, so apparently that's when I saved that document. What was the question again, Charles?
The question was, at what point in time did you learn of the collapse of FRM?
Okay. That must have been sometime between, sometime after 9/26/09. It was, seems to be shortly after that, because that's probably when the payments started, stopped coming to me. Also, I got the last, you know, I got two payments, and then I got the third payment, I think it was, and I stuck in the bank, and then all of a sudden the check bounced, and so I had, that's when I started trying to call, and had that, you know, cell phone number, and along with his business number and stuff, and when I started calling, I got messages that the phone was out of service, you know, and that's when I started putting two and two together and figured that things were kind of sideways.
So you just testified, your recollection is that you received three payments, one of which didn't clear. So that would, if I'm correct, and you had a July 21st loan, that would have been August, September, and October. And if I characterize your testimony saying that the October payment is the payment that in your words, bounced, would that be a fair characterization of your recollection?
Yes.
Okay. Did you ever call Scott Farah and have a conversation with him about the non-payment or the bounce check?
No. By the time I started trying to get a hold of Scott Farah, the phones were already cut off.
Okay. Now, I have a packet of information that you have forwarded to the Bureau of Securities Regulation that I am accepting today under seal. It is not going to be public record. I am going to use it in my deliberations, and that's your understanding at this point. Is that correct?
Correct. Actually, part of it was going to be under seal, but my request was that all of it be under seal.
Okay. Well, I will accept it under seal. And there may, in fact, be some public documents in here. If there are mortgage documents there that are on public record, then there appear to be.
Understood.
Those clearly are available to anyone who wishes to have access to that.
My emails and stuff, I don't really want made public record.
I have not accepted, since the inception of these hearings, any email correspondence of any kind whatsoever, and to have any testimonial evidence anyway. So,
thank you.
Do you have anything else in general that you would like to present to me this morning?
Yeah, you know, one of the questions, one of the reasons that I understand that you're having these hearings is to determine, you know, if something could be done to alleviate these kinds of situations in the future. And I have a list of a little bit of other people's testimonies. And I guess the thing that I'm thinking in my mind is other people apparently made complaints about Scott Farah before the collapse of the loan company, and their complaints weren't taken seriously and weren't investigated. And I've had similar problems with the attorney generals and the corporation commission in Arizona also, you know, complain about people and the complaints are not taken seriously, and says, oh, this is not in our jurisdiction, or this is not a serious enough a complaint for us to do something about, so we're not going to even look at it. And so then the same kind of situation occurs as occurred in this situation with Scott Farah. And I guess it would be nice to know that if you sent the letter to an investigating agency in your state, that they would kind of take it seriously and look into the matter before hundreds and thousands of people are harmed and damaged about it. The other thing that I'd like to say is, in the bankruptcy proceedings, I don't really understand what's going on. I had what I considered to be a mortgage document with real estate as collateral, and I was prohibited from going through the collection process. You know, my guess is the appraisal was fraudulent appraisal, and I don't know how the documents would be fraudulent with an attorney involved, you know, without that attorney being a part of the conspiracy, but if it was, hopefully the attorney's going to get punished along with Scott. But if it was a good document, and I should be allowed, me and the cops should be allowed to go and collect from our guy or get the lot back, even though it may not have any value because of the fraudulent appraisal. But it'd be nice if we could go get our property back or have Baldy pay us or whatever, you know, and do that instead of being rolled into a bunch of other people that are unrelated to our deal.
Anything else you'd like to put on the record this morning, Mr. Brandt?
I don't know. Is there a way to investigate the bankruptcy hearing? Because those guys seem to be the guys that are, you know, we were harmed by Scott, obviously, but we're being harmed again by the bankruptcy court, I think. So if there's a way to take a look at that, I'd like that to happen.
Yeah. It doesn't appear to be in my jurisdiction at this point in time.
Okay.
But let me say that your observations and sentiments have been heard in this forum since October of 2010.
Okay.
Also here today are attorneys.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, it seems like you're doing a great job on investigating this from the testimony that I've listened to, and it's nice to be able to click on a link in the internet and hear other people's testimony and what's been going on with other people. It'd be nice if that could happen with the bankruptcy court. You know, I don't know what's going on there, but whatever it is, it doesn't seem right to me.
Also here today with me are attorneys from the Bureau of Securities Regulation who, with my permission, have an opportunity to ask questions. They may or may not have Attorney Force here, or Attorney Spill, do you have any questions of Mr. Brandt?
I don't have any questions, Mr. Brandt, but I want to thank you for allowing us to call you at 5 a.m. in Hawaii. If you enjoy the rest of your day, we appreciate your call.
Attorney Spill, do you have anything?
All right, thank you.
Mr. Brandt, thank you very much. It is extremely meaningful to me that people who have been victimized in this Ponzi scheme take the time to come forward and provide me with information. It's of great assistance to me. I do have one thing before I go that I didn't clear up. How many years have you been involved in the hard money lending business?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm involved in it. You know, I'm a real estate broker, so my goal is to help people accomplish their dreams, you know, build a building or start a business or something like that. So, you know, I help people find property or find buildings and then convert those buildings or convert that property into something that they can use, a school. I've been in a lot of charter schools, a bank, a restaurant, a shopping center, you know, whatever. So I use hard money lenders when it's appropriate to use hard money lenders. I also use traditional lenders and investors, you know, guys that put money in as equity so that there's enough of a down payment so that a person can go to a bank and get a 75% loan-to-value loan. So I use hard money lenders, but I'm not really in the hard money lending business.
Oh, I understand.
Real estate business.
I understand that fully. But the ease with which you speak and the language you use tells me that you've been doing this for a number of years, and I'd like to get an idea of how many years you've been in that.
I'm trying to remember when I ran into my first hard money lender and even learned what it was. It's been at least 20 years.
Okay.
The maximum it could have been is 35 years, because that's how long I've been a real estate investor and a I was in the construction business, and then I became a realtor and got into the real estate business. And so I've been an investor and a contractor and a real estate broker for a long time. So it's been at least 20 years. And, you know, I'm going to say it was probably before the last downturn, because I had some second trustees that my accountant got me investing in when I was before the 1988 to 92 downturn. And after those all went sideways and became more worthless, then I decided to only do first thoughts instead of seconds. So I would say at least 20 years and possibly 30.
That's what I expected based upon the tenor of your conversation this morning. And again, thank you very much, and we're off the record with Mr. Rick Brandt.
Okay, good luck, you guys.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
Are you going to take that as a
one? I'm going to take that as one. We're going to mark that as 115. And there are documents in there that are clearly public.
Okay.
And I guess I'll flag those.
Mr. Bean is next.
Here. This is just so you have in front of you what he intends to introduce and ask you to accept. And
okay.
If you do, I wish to review it for confidentiality and various numbers and things like that. Okay. I would redact it over lunch.
Is this produced by Mr. Bean?
It is. That's a statement.
Oh, that's his
signed. And then the statement after that is his mother. She produces a statement as well, signs it.
Okay.
And then there's other accompanying documents and other stuff they wish to enter.
Our next witness will be Harry Bean, Mr. Bean.
You want him here?
Please do. Mr. Bean, you've testified before, and I think if you recall at the end of that testimony, I indicated that if you were to come back, you were remaining under oath. That's understood by you?
Yes, sir.
Welcome, Mr. Bean.
Thank you. I've got this that I'd like to be in the report. The Attorney General's report on FRM dated May 12, 2010 lists on page 8 7 investors. The report does not identify who the 7 are. However, subsequent requests to the AG's office under the Freedom of Information Act resulted in the identification of the 7 investors. 2 of the 7 people identified were my mother and myself, Harry Bean. I would like to clarify truthfully for the record what really happened. My mother will independently testify as to what communications transpired between her and the AG. My recollection is as follows. I can't truthfully recall the AG ever contacting me. However, if there was communication, there was never an interview, as the AG suggests. For sure, I would have recollection of a conversation regarding FRM, as the collapse of FRM has had a devastating impact on my family and finances. My engagement with any and all state agencies has the highest priority for me. Therefore, it is with certainty that there was never an interview with me. Never. The AG has made assumptions regarding FRM and what happened. These assumptions are not correct, and he has published a report which clearly was incomplete and premature. The AG has done a disservice to the state of New Hampshire and to the victims. I will elaborate shortly. Now, with the Chandler hearings, your hearings have produced credible testimony from over 30 people of whom were never asked to testify prior to your hearings. The AG has declined to modify his May report to reflect this new and critical information when asked by you. How does one interpret the stubbornness to refuse to acknowledge facts and reissue a report that serves New Hampshire government responsibly? This should concern everyone in the state. We're not being served by misinformation. This behavior must not continue. New Hampshire will soon have a reputation as a state where crooks have fertile soil. This reputation hurts everyone very badly. I made reference to incomplete and premature information in the AG's report. What I'd like to point out is the following. The AG put FRM into Chapter 7 bankruptcy. This means that the bankruptcy trustee is directed to liquidate. This decision to proceed to Chapter 7 was based upon the belief that because the bank accounts of CLNM were without any fraud, there were no assets. This is clearly incorrect. There were millions of dollars
Mr.
worth.
Mr. Bean, can I interrupt you? You read in your statement we're without any fraud, and your statement says without any funds.
How far back?
I'm in paragraph number one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the third line. It says this decision to proceed into Chapter 7 was based upon the belief because the bank accounts of
Yes, without any funds. Yes, I'm sorry, I misread
okay.
that. Glasses are a little.
So am I.
This is clearly the bank accounts of CLNM were without any funds. There were no assets. This is clearly incorrect. There were millions of dollars worth of tangible assets. Moving to Chapter 7 has caused the victims to be victimized again. This should never have happened. FRNM and CLNM should have been placed in Chapter 11. This mistake is huge. Number two, the AG's report insists on calling the victims investors, not lenders. This distinction supports the Chapter 7 bankruptcy trustees' contention that the assets are securities rather than legitimate mortgage and promissory note transactions. The bankruptcy trustee loves the AG's incorrect identification of the victims as investors. The AG's office is at odds with the Bureau of Securities on what constitutes a security. A professor of law, Mr. Joseph Long, is recognized as one of the premier experts in real estate law. He wrote the Blue Sky Law books used by law universities. His interpretation of securities under New Hampshire law has been met with disagreement by the AG. The AG brought in a banking and securities professional lawyer from Boston to provide testimony on the FRM transactions, and this expert never even looked at a single FRM document. This smacks a predetermined conclusion looking for support. Number four, the AG's office received complaints of fraud year after year. Their report did not reflect all complaints of fraud. Why? And incidentally, none of the complaints of fraud were ever acted on. Number five, the AG's report points to a shared failure of the banking department, the Bureau of Securities, and the AG's office. Your hearings have shown that the vast majority of the failure was due to the banking department's complete ineptness, as well as the AG's failure to act on the fraud brought to their attention. The Bureau of Securities is the only division to have taken any action against FRM. The AG's report, which identifies the Bureau of Securities as having ownership in not closing FRM down, is basing their opinion on their definition of a security, which is shown above to be incorrect. Governor Lynch has embraced the AG's report as comprehensive and complete. I urge the governor and the state legislature to review your report carefully. This report does not yet exist, but whatever its contents, the facts in this report will be an accurate basis for corrective action, which may have management implications as well as legislative implications. This is the report that should be embraced by all. Well, that's what I had to say here. My mother will testify to you concerning her quote-unquote interview. And I know that you don't allow emails. I just heard you say that. My brother emailed Mr. Miller.
Your brother who has passed away?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And I think that maybe you could make an exception considering the circumstances.
Let me give you my view on emails.
Okay.
I've been very careful throughout this process to take testimony under oath, be it oral testimony as you have done today and before, be it interrogatories, be it depositions, be it some transcripts of another forum where someone was under oath. The rules of evidence don't apply here, but I'm always worried about the credibility of evidence and how believable it can be. And I have universally held that emails don't rise to a level to be sufficiently credible for me so that I can attach much probative value at all. I will say to you, I'm very aware of your brother's passing, and I will listen to you about what I think where you're going to go, and I am hopefully sufficiently flexible to make an exception if I find it appropriate. So having said that, Mr. Bean, please proceed with what you want to present.
Well, Mr. Miller is who my brother was communicating with in these emails. So he's going to talk to that fact, but I don't want anything to mess up. You know, I don't want any black marks against the credibility of this report. So if this might put a little black mark, don't use it.
Tell me what it is that you want to present to me, and why it is significant to you.
Well, it talks about. The seven quote-unquote investors, and the fact that my brother Ronnie as a spokesman was, and he didn't talk to him.
So your statement today is that the Attorney General's office reported that they spoke with your late brother?
No, they reported that they spoke with my mother, but as she'll testify, they called her, as did a number of people in the past 15, 16 months. And any time that anybody calls her, as soon as they say FRM, she's out. She'll say, call my sons and Ronnie and I. And so she wasn't interviewed, obviously, because that's what she told whoever called. And Ronnie's email reflects that he was never contacted by these people after she told them to call him if they wanted to know anything about.
Mr. Bean, I'm going to accept these emails. I'm going to attach whatever probative value that I deem appropriate to them. Mr. Miller, whom I recognize is here today, and if he will confirm independently that he was the recipient of that, I will accept it under those conditions, which is contrary to any position I take, and I do this obviously.
I just don't want to jeopardize
the
integrity
of the report. No, you're not going to jeopardize the thing. No.
This report is critical.
Well, I fully understand that.
Do you want Mr. Miller or my mother?
Since I have the emails here, I might ask Mr. Miller to retake the stand and you show him the emails. And
he has them.
Okay.
Miles, sir?
You're fine. Mr. Bean, thank you very much for taking the time to come back. It's very important. I'm good to see you. Thank you.
Here it is. From me? Here it is. Oh, I'm here. Well, you can have this. I'm actually here.
Mr. Miller, you testified early on in these proceedings, and I believe I told you at that time that if you came back, you would understand that you remain under oath. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And you acknowledge that you are under oath today as a result of the hearings. I also understand that you may wish to testify later this afternoon if that's the case, but I want you to focus on the emails brought to this forum this morning by Mr. Bean. And will you independently confirm for me that you, in fact, were the recipient of those emails?
I'd have to see which ones you're talking about, but I...
Mr. Bean, would you show him to me what's presumably in my package?
The one dated August 24th, 2010, at 10:44?
I have an August 23rd.
Okay, that's the one that came from Ronnie Bean to me at 10:02 a.m.?
Yes.
And it says, hello, Ken, and go
yes.
through it?
Yes.
I can see that.
And I have a September 7th, 2010 at 4:31 p.m. I don't know what that is.
What's the date on it?
September 7th, 2010, 4:31 p.m. Hi, Mr. Miller.
Oh, okay.
That's not Ronnie's.
This is from Mr. and Mrs. Alex.
Okay, right. I'm not going to accept that.
Right.
Do we have others, relative?
I received one from Ronnie that came to me, came to Representative Gidge, but it went directly to Mr. Richard Head, Attorney Head. You have that one dated August 24th.
August 24th, 2010, 10:44 a.m. from Ronnie Bean.
Right.
I don't understand how you play into this. You don't appear to be a recipient.
I'm also looking the two block. He goes to Richard Head, and then K.F. Miller, and then to K.F.
Okay. I didn't notice that. Okay, fine. And you'll acknowledge the receipt of that?
I received that, yes.
Okay. Are there others that I haven't seen here?
All right.
I think that's it for that particular purpose, Mr. Miller. Am I correct in understanding that you might wish to retake the stand this afternoon?
I knew you said that a minute ago.
I thought I saw his name on a list for this.
For this very purpose.
I have one more.
Well,
the letters.
That's exactly why I asked that question, because there appear to be letters unrelated to Mr. Bean that relate to you, and I would want some authentication of those letters. And I didn't
do that later.
I don't wish to preempt Mrs. Bean and her ability to come forward and testify. But since you're on the stand, acknowledge you're under oath, why don't you draw my attention to those letters and explain to me what they represent to you?
I have one dated August 18th from Mr. Head.
I have that.
And that's the one that outlines the people that he considered that he contacted.
Okay.
Over the investors. I have another one dated September 1st.
2010?
Right. That was in, he answers a couple letters in one letter. So if you go down to the second page, where it says your fourth request is for the names of the personnel who conducted the interviews, and I was the lead attorney in the interviews of current and former state employees, attorney Latice and Ron and Jackie Stone. And then he goes down, Assistant Attorney General Christopher Marshall assisted with all those interviews, with the exception of an interview of Susan Gorman. That's where he goes on there. I had some questions about who Susan Gorman was. I had written a draft letter, and I never did send it out, but in that draft letter, I found that she was actually a member of the Attorney General's staff.
Is it fair to say, Mr. Miller, that the content of this letter doesn't relate to the facts and the positions brought forth by Mr. Bean today?
Right.
Okay.
And then I think that covers it.
Okay. Mr. Miller, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I would like to hear from Thelma Bean, if that would be. You're under no obligation to testify, Mrs. Bean, but I have a statement here. Raise your right hand. You solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give in the matter now pending this hearing will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
I notice... you can be seated, please. I notice that we have a statement signed, purportedly signed by you on February 18, 2011. Would you like to read that into the record, please?
Okay. I don't recall the date, but sometime between 3 and 4 o'clock, I got a call from Richard Head. He asked if I was involved with FRM. I told him I was. I don't recall exactly what he said after, but as he started to ask me something like how much money was involved, I immediately told him I really couldn't give him any answers because my two sons were handling the entire thing for us, and I really don't have any knowledge of it. I told him I would give him my son's phone numbers, and he could call them, and he said he would. I gave him my son Ronnie's home and cell numbers, and he assured me at that time he would, and also my son Harry's. He said he would give them a call. A couple of hours later, I asked Ronnie if he had gotten a call involving FRM, and he said he hadn't. He said he was going to get a hold of them to find out what it was all about. And after my initial question to Ronnie, I did not ask him again to find out if they had spoken because, like, they always took care of everything for us, so I just let it go at that.
So your son has indicated to us today that you never engaged in any kind of an interview with Attorney Head, is that correct?
No, I did not. Only he called and started asking me questions, and like I told everybody else that asked me questions, I really don't know what's going on.
Is it fair to say that single phone call where you moved the issue off to your sons was your only contact with Attorney Head?
Yes.
Thank you. I have nothing further. Unless you have anything further you'd like to bring to this hearing. Okay. Mrs. Bean, thank you very much for taking the time to come down today. Attorney Forcier.
At this time, our next witness is scheduled for 12:30.
Okay, but Attorney Forcier, I have something here. I don't know what this is.
Those documents before you were other documents that Dean had given me that, unless he chooses to address, I don't know if he...
I have no interest in accepting that in any way whatsoever. I'm going to accept the statement of Harry Bean, Thelma Bean, and the corroborated emails as one item. This will be
the exhibit 116.
116. So this will be marked as one. Attorney Forster Spill. I have Mr. Miller's letter, which he authenticated for me to be an independent entry, but I have a fourth page that I don't understand.
Can I see it?
What is that? Just something that shouldn't be there?
I believe the letter there, this was an attachment to the letter as an indication of what Mr. Head was using as a template when he was interviewing. This is the interview process. This is, I believe, not Mr. Miller, but I believe this fourth page was provided.
That was the methodology that was sent to me.
Along with the letter?
Would you come back to the stand, Mr. Miller? I'm going to show you a fourth page, and you're on the record, Mr. Miller. Would you tell me what that fourth page is on that? I am about to accept into evidence your September 1st, 2010 letter to you from Richard Head.
That was the methodology, I believe,
Did that accompany this three-page letter that I'm about to accept?
It did. Let me just take a minute to look at it. Yes, that was the that was on the back of his letter, September 1st.
Okay,
that was the last part.
So, for the record, item this will be 117. 117 will be the September 1st, 2010 letter from Associate Attorney General Richard Head to Kenneth Miller and. A one-page attachment, it's not labeled attachment, but it has three headings of introduction, purpose, and questions. And, this is, and I will accept this as item 117. Thank you.
That was his methodology.
I understand. I understand that.
I had him come by fall, but scheduling.
That's fine. Scheduling is always difficult in this kind of thing. I want to be clear about one thing I mentioned this morning. We're going to be receiving the bankruptcy under oath statement of Scott Farah, but I'm not going to be able to accept that. Technically until next Monday, since this process is closed and I'm going to be accepting it, how are we going to make that known? Can we do it on the website somehow?
I can.
So that the public knows that that is there.
We can surely make an announcement on the FRM investigative website.
So at close of business on Monday, when the 30-day time limit has run, unless something has intervened between then and now.
We got the statement.
Okay.
Yes.
And the same is going to hold true when we're at the resolution of the Hilbert interrogatories.
Correct.
Okay. Is there anything else to come before the hearing this morning?
No, sir.
And our time to reconvene is when?
12:30.
Well, I'm going to deem us recessed, and you have a long lunch. I have the key, so we're going to...
Do you want to... I'll secure it.